Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Parenthood Podcast. I'm Marina Fogel, and I'm here today with Dr. Kiara Hunt to discuss something that affects up to 1 in 3 pregnant couples, but it's something that no one really talks about. It's miscarriage. When we find out we're pregnant, generally we're told not to tell anyone before we get to that all-important 12-week scan, and so we spend the next few weeks enduring the sickness, the extreme fatigue, anxiety, and the excitement on our own. Now, this is all well and good when you can break the good news to your friends that you're expecting a baby. But when the plan doesn't go to plan, when you find out that that little embryo that you were so excited about hasn't made it, you suddenly have loads of questions. You're desperate to ask your friends for advice, but because you haven't shared your news, it's difficult to ask them. This is certainly what I felt when it happened to me in my first pregnancy, which is why we thought that this podcast was really important. Millions of women experience miscarriage every year around the world, but sometimes there's just no one to talk to. So what Kiara and I are going to do today is talk about what it is, what is miscarriage, why it happens, and how it will make you feel so that at least you have some information to help you. Kiara, it's probably worth starting with just that basic question. What is miscarriage?
So miscarriage is the loss of a pregnancy before 24 weeks. So, you know, that's quite far along into your pregnancy. And there are different terminologies for the different stage of miscarriage, but essentially it's when the pregnancy doesn't survive and you lose the baby.
But it's most common in the first 12 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we call early miscarriage is miscarriage any time in that first trimester, the first 12 weeks. And then it is really common. It's 1 in 4 of recognized pregnancies, so where there's been a positive pregnancy test. And realistically, it's probably a lot more than that. They think it's probably 1 in 2 when you count the pregnancies that have happened but have miscarried before you'd be expecting your period to come anyway. So you wouldn't know necessarily that you were pregnant.
And
but it is common.
And why does it happen? Why does miscarriage happen?
So there are lots and lots of different reasons why miscarriage might happen, but the most common reason is faulty chromosomes. So the baby inherits chromosomes from both parents, and you know, if the baby doesn't have the correct chromosomes, it simply can't develop properly, and the pregnancy will naturally end.
So it's your body's way of sort of taking matters into its own hands and
Absolutely, it's very natural. And if you look at animals all over the world, there'll be a high rate of miscarriage, and that is just because it's a very complicated thing, making a baby and making those chromosomes perfect. And when they're not quite perfect, then the baby won't survive because it can't develop.
When you have a miscarriage, do they always check to see if there are chromosomal abnormalities in that embryo or not?
Not routinely, no. So they would normally only start checking that once if you start having recurrent miscarriages, which is miscarriages one after another with no healthy pregnancies in between.
And what about pregnancies in which there aren't chromosomal abnormalities? I mean, you mentioned the vast majority are suspected to have chromosomal abnormalities, but presumably there are cases in which there aren't any chromosomal abnormalities, but a miscarriage still happens.
Absolutely. And often we don't know the exact cause. We know that there are various risk factors for miscarriage, which obviously we would all try and eliminate as much as possible. But, you know, often, unfortunately, we never find out the reason. We know, for example, that older maternal age, so a slightly older mother, has a higher miscarriage rate than a younger mother, and that's classed over 35. Your risk of miscarriage has increased a little bit over 45, again, quite significantly.
And lifestyle, so sort of, you know, how healthy the mother is and the father, does that play a role?
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely plays a role in miscarriage rate. So things like smoking in pregnancy will significantly increase the rates of miscarriage. Drinking alcohol, even in small amounts in that first trimester after you know you're pregnant, we know is going to be risky. There's been quite a lot of studies now. We used to think drinking a little bit of alcohol was fine in the first trimester, but we know that it really isn't anymore. Miscarriage rate is quite a lot higher. Using recreational drugs, we know that that's dangerous. If you have had assisted conception to achieve this pregnancy, so if you've had any fertility treatment or undergone IVF, then again, those first 12 weeks are risky.
And what about obesity and weight and being underweight?
Yeah. Having a healthy body mass index, so a healthy weight, is really important. And actually being underweight and overweight is risky for a pregnancy, and underweight particularly, because your body will prioritize you in this early stage of pregnancy. And if you don't have the energy reserves and the body mass to carry a baby, then your body won't carry it.
And being overweight?
Yeah. Similarly, rates of miscarriage are higher if you're obese rather than overweight.
And so,
medical conditions too. So if you have medical conditions like untreated, you know, or poorly treated diabetes or various immune problems, then that's obviously going to affect your rate of miscarriage as well.
So what actually happens when you miscarry? How does it manifest itself, you know, as a mother? How do you know if you're miscarrying?
I think, can I go to that in a second? One thing that's really important, I think it's really important, there are lots of myths around like what causes miscarriage. And very, very, very rarely is anything the mother's done, unless they are sort of drinking and smoking heavily and taking lots of drugs. You know, but for example, lifting heavy things, carrying things, that can't cause miscarriage. You know, straining, people worry that if they're really constipated or if they're straining a lot, then that's going to somehow force the baby out. Absolutely, that can't happen, it's impossible. Sex does not affect miscarriage, so you can have sex as normal when you're pregnant, that's not going to make you miscarry. Exercise as well, you can exercise as much as you were normally doing before you were pregnant, that's not going to change things.
I mean, you mentioned sort of drinking. Obviously, the way sort of biology works, we mostly don't find out that we're pregnant until we do that pregnancy test, which is usually on the first day of what would be your period. So by that stage, you're 4 weeks pregnant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't tell you how many consultations I've had from women who come and tell me they're pregnant and they're really excited. And obviously, as soon as they've known, they have, you know, they've behaved very well and not, you know, looked after themselves and have looked after themselves. But they worry, they say, gosh, you know, I was at a wedding or at a party before I knew I was pregnant, but obviously now I know I was pregnant then. In reality, you know, nature is quite clever, and there's a reason you only find out you're pregnant when you do, and that's because that's generally when the implantation happens. So although you were pregnant before, you knew you were pregnant, and the embryo hadn't implanted yet, so what you were doing to your own body is much less likely to have had an effect on that embryo. So I generally tell people not to worry too much about what's happened in the past and just focus now. You know you're pregnant, look after yourself as much as possible going forward.
And if you've had a miscarriage and then you say, right, we're going to try and get pregnant, then just be aware of what you're doing and sort of get yourself into the best shape. I mean, you know, pregnancy is tough on your body anyway, so it's not a bad idea, you know, regardless of miscarriage, just to get yourself into kind of fighting fit shape before
what's arguably one of the toughest
things your body will ever do.
Yeah, and I think that is really important, but it also has to be balanced against the stress of making sure everything is perfect and the conditions are perfect to get pregnant, especially if you're struggling to get pregnant. Absolutely eat healthily, absolutely, you know, be a healthy weight and don't drink and don't smoke. But if you're trying and it's not happening and it's 6 months down the line and 12 months down the line, you also have to be able to relax and enjoy yourself. So it's getting the balance between those that's really important.
Okay. I think it's really helpful just to understand, you know, how does it manifest itself? How do you know you're having a miscarriage?
So I think the important thing to know, and what a lot of people don't know, is that sometimes it doesn't. Most commonly, you have bleeding and tummy pain, abdominal cramps, so that kind of horrid, periody, crampy pain with bleeding in pregnancy. That's the most common side. But sometimes the baby can miscarry, and you can, or the pregnancy can miscarry, and you can have no bleeding and no cramping. And the first time you find out that you've miscarried is when you have the scan at 12 weeks and there is no heartbeat.
And there's been no outward signs that you've had a miscarriage.
No, so in retrospect, the only outward signs usually are that you stop feeling pregnant, which again, often you only realise when you look back on it, because you can sort of will yourself to feel pregnant, even if you're not. And I think a lot of people say to me, actually,
stop holding your tummy in.
Yeah, I stopped. you know, my breasts weren't really tender anymore. My nausea got better. I stopped feeling pregnant.
And if you did a pregnancy after you'd had a missed miscarriage, if you did a pregnancy test after you had had a missed miscarriage, would it come positive or negative, that pregnancy test?
It depends when it was, but it's certainly positive for a few weeks after the miscarriage.
So if, you know, it's obviously something we really worry about. And if you know you're kind of in the early stages of pregnancy and you think, oh, I'm worrying about having a miscarriage, doing another pregnancy test, is that likely
that's
to be?
That's a bit of false reassurance, because it stays, the pregnancy hormone stays in the urine for a little bit after the pregnancy fails. Probably the best thing to do is have a scan before 12 weeks. But some, if you aren't able to do that, then the blood test to check the pregnancy hormone, it's called serial beta HCG measurements. So if that's going up when you're taking those, you know, every few days, then you know the pregnancy is continuing.
So just to clarify, in the NHS, your first scan is routinely offered at 12 weeks. But if you have had bleeding or there are specific concerns about your pregnancy, sometimes they will offer you an earlier scan.
Absolutely.
That's right, isn't it?
No, if you've had any bleeding, you'd go to the early pregnancy unit and they'd scan you and see how things were looking.
And that is an internal examination, isn't it? It's
yes.
Not an external one with the sort of jelly and the...
Yeah, so in a scan before 12 weeks, they would normally do what we call transvaginal ultrasound scan using a vaginal ultrasound probe, which I think is really important to know because you might not be expecting that. It's not uncomfortable, but it's something they will talk you through, but it is the best way of visualizing the pregnancy and be able to see whether there's a heartbeat there or not.
And something that's worth warning your partner about, just because, yeah. I mean, they do it very discreetly. They put a blanket over your legs, but
Absolutely.
They do whip out a large probe, put a condom on top, and
yeah.
that can be a bit of a shock, I think, for some couples.
Yeah.
Does all bleeding in early pregnancy mean that you're miscarrying?
No, and that's actually a really important point. It's very common to have a little bit of bleeding in early pregnancy, sometimes even quite heavy bleeding that doesn't mean a miscarriage. Very commonly people have what's called an implantation bleed, where the embryo is implanting into the uterus lining, and that will often stimulate a little bit of bleeding. There are various other reasons that you could have bleeding that's not associated with miscarriage, but I suppose the point is, if you have any bleeding, you're going to want to have a scan or have any tests to see that the pregnancy is healthy.
And so that's what you want to do. You don't have a big bleed and sort of the cramping, you think, oh, it's 6 weeks, I'm obviously miscarrying, and just leave it. You would always go and get checked out rather than just think, that's it, it's like a period, I'll just try again next month.
Absolutely, you could still be pregnant. And that's a very important point. You could have a bleed as heavy as a period and you could still be pregnant. It could not be a miscarriage. The overwhelming likelihood is that it is a miscarriage, but you'd have to have a scan to check. And I've certainly looked after a number of women who've had very heavy bleeding in early pregnancy who've had a very healthy ongoing pregnancy.
Could it be possible that you'd conceive twins and one has miscarried, or do both? Would it be that both twins have not survived?
No, that's absolutely possible. Yeah, so you could. Obviously, if you don't know you're having twins until the 12-week scan, you wouldn't know that. And if one has spontaneously miscarried and there is no evidence of that twin left, you'll never know for sure. But that's definitely a possibility if they're non-identical twins.
One thing that I think a lot of women are aware of, maybe don't know too much about, but I think should be aware of, is ectopic pregnancy, which is another risk in the early sort of first trimester.
Absolutely, and that is what doctors worry about. It's probably one of the most dangerous things that can happen in pregnancy. And it always results in miscarriage, because an ectopic pregnancy is when the pregnancy implants outside of the uterus, so usually in the fallopian tube. And obviously a baby starting to grow in that place is not going to have enough room to grow, so will miscarry. But at the same time, as it grows, it can rupture, and it can rupture your ovarian, your fallopian tube, and cause you to be extremely unwell very quickly. So that with an ectopic pregnancy usually happens around the six to eight weeks. And you tend to be having really very severe pain, and it tends to be in one side rather than a miscarriage, which is crampy period pain that's generalized around that area. An ectopic tends to be on one side, and often you have vomiting or diarrhea with it and feel extremely unwell, often a bit faint. You can become very unwell very quickly. So if you have any of those symptoms in early pregnancy, you have to go straight to hospital. You don't always have bleeding with an ectopic pregnancy. Sometimes you have some very dark blood that passes, and sometimes nothing at all. So anyone in early pregnancy experiencing those symptoms needs to go straight to hospital.
And they'll obviously scan you. I mean, that's one of the purposes of an early scan, is to check that the baby is there and that the baby's in the right place.
Absolutely.
So if you've had a history of ectopic pregnancy, should you go and would you be offered an early scan?
They would normally do that routinely, and yes, you should.
And that would be at what, 6 weeks? Or?
6 weeks, yeah. So from 6 weeks is usually the earliest you would see a heartbeat, 6 to 7 weeks. So if you have a threatened miscarriage before then, they would.
So that's bleeding. So
a threatened miscarriage would be bleeding. Exactly.
But the baby,
we don't know if the baby survived or not. If after 6 weeks with a threatened miscarriage, you can see the heartbeat is still there and the baby still seems to be doing well, but you're bleeding. If it's before 6 weeks, then you wouldn't see a heartbeat anyway. So it's just a case of monitoring the pregnancy hormone and seeing if it's continuing to rise.
Is it possible to have a miscarriage with cramping but no bleeding? So if you're experiencing lots of cramping, should you go and get checked out if there's no blood?
Yeah, absolutely. It is, because that could be signs of a missed miscarriage.
How important, I mean, we talked that you should definitely get checked out. If you're having a miscarriage and you're bleeding, how quickly do you need to get to your doctor? And should you be going straight to hospital, or should you be going to see your GP?
So if you have early pregnancy bleeding and it's light and you're not in significant pain and you don't have significant blood loss, then you can happily stay at home until the next opportunity to go and see your doctor, which would normally be the next day, where they would organise for you to have a scan and a checkup by an obstetrician or gynaecologist. But that's not a case of rushing straight into hospital by ambulance that night. That can all be done in a relatively relaxed fashion. If you're having bleeding and the pain is severe and the bleeding is heavy and you're not feeling well.
And you say heavy, much, much heavier than a normal
much,
period.
Much, much heavier than a normal period.
Kind of gushing out, yeah. You know, soaking through a pad.
Yeah.
In.
But again, with you feeling unwell with it, then you should certainly go to hospital.
Sorry, let me just get to the next page. And then what will happen when you see your doctor? What will they do?
So you'd normally call your GP or your obstetrician. Your GP would send you to a pregnancy assessment unit where they would do a scan, and they'd be able to see pretty quickly whether the pregnancy was still there or not, as long as it was after 6 weeks. They may do a blood test if they're worried you've lost a lot of blood. And then if the pregnancy has all, if you have lost the pregnancy completely and there's nothing to see and you've had the miscarriage essentially, then they will give you some, you know, so they'll talk to you about it and send you away. If you're in the middle of a miscarriage or you've had a missed miscarriage that hasn't come out yet, and they'll offer you various management options. So they'll sort of give you choices as to how you want to go from there.
So whether or not you just sit it out and wait for the miscarriage to happen naturally and all the tissue, I guess, of what was there to leave your body naturally, or whether it is surgically removed.
Absolutely. So there are various options. When you're having a miscarriage, usually you do pass a clot at some point. And that's essentially what you want to happen, because you want everything to come out to prevent infection happening and prevent it all going on too long. And if that's happened naturally, that's brilliant. If it's early days and they think that might still happen naturally, then they'll manage you with what's called expectant management or natural management, where it is literally just let nature take its course, let's wait and see what happens, and hopefully it all will happen without any need for any intervention. It is a natural thing to happen. It's not, it doesn't mean that there's a problem that you've had a miscarriage. It is natural. So they would all the follow-up would be then is a pregnancy test 3 weeks later to check that that you weren't pregnant anymore.
If that doesn't happen naturally, or I mean, like with me, I had a miscarriage with my first pregnancy, went along to the 12-week scan expecting to have good news and found that there had been no heartbeat, and I think they decided that there had been no growth past 8 weeks or so. So that was 4 weeks that this this cluster of cells had been sitting inside me, and I hadn't naturally miscarried. I mean, what would happen if you did nothing? Would just sit there forever, or is that risky?
So the risk is that it gets infected. The products of conception essentially get infected, and you can get quite unwell with it. So it is important to get it out, essentially. And you talked about a missed miscarriage, and actually I think it's quite important to clarify that. I know we sort of mentioned it earlier, but there are different types of miscarriage, and people seem to think it's always associated with bleeding, and it's not. So a missed miscarriage is when your baby, when the fetus has died, the heartbeat has stopped at a certain stage in that early pregnancy, but you have had no bleeding, no cramping, no signs of a miscarriage, and it's not until the scan shows no heartbeat that you know that you've miscarried. And that is not an uncommon type of miscarriage. And in that situation, you'd be offered, you wouldn't be offered wait and see anymore, because obviously you'd unwittingly been waiting and seeing for the last 4 weeks in your case. So you'd be offered medical management or surgical management of the miscarriage. And medical management is where they'll give you medications, usually in terms of a tablet and a gel, a vaginal gel, to get rid of the product of the pregnancy that's no longer viable. Or a surgical management of miscarriage, which is where you'll have a light general anaesthetic usually. Sometimes it's done under local anaesthetic, where they will remove the pregnancy.
So that's called a D&C, isn't it? Just so that people become familiar with the terminology.
Yeah, so it's called a D&C, but it's the terminology has actually all changed quite recently, and we now call it surgical management of miscarriage.
Okay, and that is basically they it's a bit like having a smear test. They open up your legs and they open up your uterus and
so normally done under general anaesthetic. They will go through the cervix and suction the products out. Basically, you have to clean out the uterus, the cavity of the uterus, but they don't make any cuts anywhere. You're not having an operation as such where they're cutting any part of your uterus or your skin open. It's all done through the vagina, up through the cervix, and then they can suction it all away.
And obviously the downside of that is having a hospital procedure. It's done always in hospital as opposed to at your GP, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
You have an anaesthetic. It's a light anaesthetic, but you are sort of out. And obviously there are risks associated with that. But on the plus side, you know for sure that all the product has been removed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can, I mean, certainly from experience, you bleed after that, don't you? It's
absolutely
not like they remove all the tissue. It's but you still
bleed,
have a big bleed.
That. Yeah.
And that's for what, a week or so, yes. I seem to remember.
Up to 14 days you can bleed for, whether you have a medical or surgical management of miscarriage. And some people don't like the idea of surgical management. Some people really like the idea because it's quick, you know that it's done, you have less uncertainty going forward. But it is a procedure that is A, more expensive, and B, slightly more invasive. So it's not for everyone. And I think your doctor will normally advise as to what procedure is better for you. It is possible to have surgical management of miscarriage under local anaesthetic, not general anaesthetic, and it's something called manual vacuum aspiration, or MVA, but that is only in very specific circumstances, and it's a relatively traumatic thing to go through. I mean, any of this is going to be traumatic. You're going to be heartbroken that you've lost the pregnancy anyway, and then having to go through medical procedures to sort of finish the job if nature hasn't done it naturally is horrible for everyone, but unfortunately it is really important.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I mean, this is a bit of a difficult question to ask, but I probably think a question that people listening to this are thinking. When you miscarry, you don't see a baby. You don't see a tiny, weeny little baby. You see what? A sort of clump of blood at this stage.
Yeah, a big blood clot normally. Yeah, it does depend, obviously, on how far along the pregnancy you are. And we've, up to this point, been just talking about early miscarriage, where normally you wouldn't see anything other than a blood clot.
And when does that start to change?
So from about 12 weeks onwards, and miscarriage, as I say, is anything up to 24 weeks. But management of miscarriage from 12 to 24 weeks is very different, because that will involve stimulating labour and for the mother to have to deliver the baby, especially if it's getting closer to 24 weeks, and that is very different.
Yeah. And at what point between 12 and 24 does it sort of turn into, you know, would you deliver a little something that resembled a human?
Quite soon after 12 weeks.
Yeah. So that's something that they would prepare you
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. It's but a obviously very different procedure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose the good thing to know if you're listening to this and you are pregnant is that it's very rare, much, much, much more rare
absolutely.
After 12 weeks. So before 12 weeks, we think potentially up to 1 in 3 pregnancies, but after 12 weeks, I don't know if you have the statistics to hand, but it is
like a 1 in 100 or something. I don't know exactly, but it's much, much, much rarer. And that tends to be because they've discovered some sort of chromosomal abnormality in the fetus that isn't compatible with life. And so the baby then sadly dies in utero.
I mean, that I think that brings us on quite nicely to the emotional side of things, which, you know, we've talked very much about the physical side of having a miscarriage, which I think is really important because, you know, physically, I think you need to be prepared for what might happen.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this with news that you've had a miscarriage or you've just started bleeding, I think it's really important to be prepared. But, you know, emotionally, it's tough. And I know that, you know, everyone is cautious, or most people are told to be cautious until the 12-week scan. It's still really difficult to find out you're pregnant and not feel quite excited about the little life that you're harboring inside your body. And I think that, I mean, speaking from experience, you know, with my first pregnancy, I wasn't intending to get pregnant. And I remember actually crying when I did the pregnancy test because I thought, oh, I'm not ready to be a mother. And then when I miscarried, or at least when I found out I'd miscarried, I was devastated, even though this wasn't a baby we'd been actively trying for. It made me realize very quickly that being a mother was something that was really important to me. And even though I hadn't admitted it to myself, I was still really excited. And so I think it's worth preparing people for the emotional side of things. Listen, you know, I think people have very, very different emotions around miscarriage. And if you miscarry and you're not that sad about it because maybe, you know, you've got other children and you think, well, this is just nature's way of dealing with something, we'll try again. Don't feel bad that you're not feeling bad.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, don't feel bad that you are feeling really sad. And don't expect you just to return to work and return to normal. you know, the next day, because it does take it out of you.
Well, and loss is loss whenever it happens. There's, I don't think you can quantify, you know, whether you lose your baby at 6 weeks or 12 weeks or 24 weeks, or you have a stillbirth, or you know, any sort of loss, it's still a loss. I always say to my patients, if you can, try not to make the baby into a, you know, into a person in your head. Try not to think, try not to give them a name or too much before 12 weeks, just because the risk of miscarriage is high. But that doesn't mean don't get excited about it. That doesn't mean don't tell your close friends and family about your pregnancy before 12 weeks, because you're going to need that support from them if you do miscarry. It's hard to deal with on your own.
Yeah, I sort of thinking about this, I think that you do need support from those who are around you. And I'm not saying, you know, publish your pregnancy the moment you find out about it on social media and let everyone you know, but actually telling a close group of friends in those weeks leading up to 12 weeks, you know, when you see them, the friends on whose support and family on whose support you would depend, I think is quite a good thing to do. I've got to say, listen, you know, I know that some people get superstitious, but we know that superstition plays no role in whether or not your pregnancy works or not. You know, it's the 21st century, and I think we're all clear on that. But I think that creating a support network of people that will be really helpful to you isn't a bad way of protecting yourself. And otherwise, it can be incredibly lonely. I remember thinking, you know, I told obviously you that I was pregnant, and I was very lucky because I had, you know, all the expertise, you know, you had the practical help as well. But I hadn't really told any of my friends, and yet it was those friends on whom I depended the most. And I did, as soon as I'd had this miscarriage, I did actually tell, you know, a close group of sort of 8 friends or so. And that was really, really important for me afterwards, because I'd say in the next sort of 3 months, even though the physical, you know, what I felt, the physicality of miscarriage was sort of gone, I still would feel really sad at an unexpected moment. I just want to just have a little cry. And I think the more you suppress those emotions and the more you think, oh, I can't show these emotions to my close friends, probably the harder it is to get to grips with. Whereas if you've got a small group of friends who get what you're going through. The other thing is that I found is that so many people had miscarriages who I'd no idea about. Mm. I remember doing an interview for the Telegraph about this, actually. I just wanted to be really honest. And the journalist who interviewed me said, you know, I've got 5 children, Marina. She said, I've also had 5 miscarriages. And because I was right at the beginning of my pregnancy journey, I didn't realize how common miscarriage was. And weirdly, even though I didn't rejoice in the fact that she'd had loads of miscarriages, knowing that someone with 5 children had also had 5 miscarriages was weirdly comforting for me, that it was sort of not an abnormal thing.
Well, yeah, and it is. It is normal. It is part of normal pregnancy and, you know, and childbirth. Most people will have experienced it in some way, whether it's themselves or a close friend or relative. And, you know, dealing with the emotional side of it with just your partner is quite intense and can put strain on a relationship. So being able to spread that out a bit and get support from different angles is definitely helpful.
For both of you as well, because actually, you know, we've talked about from the female side, the experience of loss, but I do think fathers really, you know, they feel that loss as much as the woman, even though, you know, it's the woman that's had the sort of physical contact with the fetus. Yeah. I think for men to sort of talk about it and share it with their friends, I think is really important. Yeah.
And
as well.
And I think we are, you know, things are changing and people are talking about it more, and there are lots of, you know, great internet forums and blogs and useful resources that people can listen to now or resource when they need it.
In terms of work, I mean, obviously most people don't tell their work about their pregnancy before they've got to 12 weeks, which I sometimes wonder about how good an idea that is, because obviously you're feeling really often quite wretched in that first trimester. And then if things don't go to plan, and if you do have a miscarriage, you're probably going to have to take some time off work. And I think it's potentially worth thinking about whether or not you're honest about your work, because I think if you are honest with people, you get proper sympathy. You don't get, oh, she being a bit of a hypochondriac because she's got, you know, a bit of tummy pain, or is it that time of the month? I think if you're honest and say, I just want you to know that I'm early days pregnant, or then if you say I've just found out that I've had a miscarriage or I'm having a miscarriage, I think people respect you more and probably give you the sympathy and the allowances that you really need when you're having a miscarriage. So listen, every work and every person's experience is slightly different. But rather than thinking it's absolutely not something I'd share with my work, maybe with one person at work who you trust and who you respect and you know will understand, it's maybe worth thinking about it.
I think it's definitely worth considering. And as you said, it does entirely depend on your circumstances. But communication and talking is always a good thing.
Back to the sort of practicality. So you mentioned after you've had a miscarriage, you do bleed for quite a long time. And actually, when you're having a sort of natural miscarriage, when your body is doing, you know, is miscarrying the baby as it should, that can be quite a difficult thing, can't it? I mean, it's not like a period and that's it.
No, you know, it can be really quite uncomfortable. There can be a lot of bleeding. It can go on and for a sort of up to 14 days or so is relatively common, and it can wax and wane, so you can have a period or a day or so where it's not too bad and then be very, very heavy. It should be getting better over that time. It shouldn't be getting worse. And if you start feeling unwell, feverish and not right, then you should definitely be seeing the doctor, because there's always a chance that some of the products of conception, so even just some of the placental remnants remain, you know, are stuck and haven't come out and can get infected. So that's really important that if you're feeling over the couple of weeks following on from miscarriage, if you're not feeling well, just have a low threshold for going to see your doctor.
And if you've been given the news that the baby's no more, or you've taken the sort of oral medication to sort of terminate the pregnancy, what should you be expecting? A sort of a couple of days? I mean, you're going to not be going to work, are
you? Yes, you'll certainly be not going to work for, if you have the medical management miscarriage, you're not be going to work for 2 or 3 days, I would have thought. You don't need to be at home
with someone, on your own.
It depends on your, if possible with someone, yes. If possible, a sister or mother or a good friend, you know, it's helpful.
And can you take painkillers? You know, if you're finding this whole process really painful.
Yeah, absolutely. You can take any painkillers that have been given to you, either any over-the-counter ones that you can tolerate, or your doctor might well have given you some slightly stronger prescription painkillers if it does get more uncomfortable.
And during this time, I mean, you learn pretty quickly that normal sort of sanitary towels don't cut it. You need a much thicker, the maternity pads, which are sort of designed for post-birth, actually, when your uterus sheds, the lining of your uterus sheds again.
Yeah, so you'll need the, you know, extra thick pads, or the maternity pads, or even some people find the sort of the big incontinence pants quite useful, especially if you have to be out and doing something and you don't want to leak, then those sort of basically adult nappies, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they can be...
They're not even in the maternity section.
They're in the incontinence section.
And at night too, I think, you know, it's probably worth having those, just because if you've just got a pad and then you think about gravity and lying, and you can see quite quickly how a lot of blood might...
And it's useful having a pad. I mean, you can't use tampons at all in this stage when you're still bleeding after a miscarriage.
And why is that?
Because of risk of infection. So, but also again, especially if this isn't your first miscarriage, or if you have the opportunity to, and you see a blood clot, I know it sounds not very nice, but if you can keep any of that, and send it, they can send it off to the lab, then if they do want to do any tests on the products of conception, then they can do that if you've kept it.
So basically just sticking it in one of those sort of like a resealable freezer bag.
Absolutely.
Or something like that.
Keep it in the pad and then just put it in a one of those. Yeah.
And how quickly do you need to get it to the hospital? As quickly as possible, that tissue, or does it start to deteriorate?
No, yeah, as quickly as is sort of possible. So not in the middle of the night, but certainly the next day.
So you bleed obviously for a bit. Usually that bleeding stops between sort of 1-2 potentially 3 weeks, or usually
two weeks. No, yeah, it should be definitely within 2 weeks. And then your next period should come a month later, but it can disrupt periods a little bit. So it might be quicker, it might be longer, just depends. And people often ask me when I'm talking to them about miscarriage, you know, when is it safe to have sex again? And it's as soon as the bleeding stopped, then it's absolutely fine to have sex again. You shouldn't again before that because of infection risk.
And will it hurt if you've had, you know, if you've had a surgical procedure? Might it hurt after? Might sex hurt after?
No, it shouldn't do. And then again is the question of pregnancy, when can you get pregnant again? And obviously there's an emotional side to that, because a lot of people want to grieve the, you know, the loss of the miscarriage and want to wait a little bit, and other people want to get pregnant as soon as possible. It's certainly the advice is wait for one period and then get pregnant again if you can. If you do get pregnant again before your period comes back, that's not the end of the world. It's not going to make you have a higher risk of miscarrying again. It just makes it a bit more difficult to date the pregnancy and work out exactly when you got pregnant, but that can be worked out further down the line if necessary. And there's actually a bit of evidence to show that if you get pregnant within 6 months of a miscarriage, you're less likely to have another miscarriage than if you wait longer than that.
Really?
Yeah.
So obviously some people listening to this will have not just had one miscarriage. They might well have had two or three. I mean, it's what we call recurrent miscarriage.
Recurrent miscarriage. So the definition of recurrent miscarriage is recurrent consecutive miscarriages. And currently, although it's changing, that is three consecutive miscarriages, although that is changing, which is a good thing, to two consecutive miscarriages. So that means you've had no healthy, successful pregnancy in between. So if, for example, like you had a miscarriage with your first pregnancy, then you had two healthy babies. If you had then had another miscarriage, that would start as number one again before you were classed as recurrent miscarriage. And once you have had two or three, depending on what they're classifying it as, consecutive miscarriages, the doctors will start doing some much more detailed tests on you and your partner and any miscarriage products to try and determine what's causing this.
Okay, so that will be the stage where they're sort of monitoring you pre-pregnancy. They'll be doing quite a lot of investigation. You'll be what referred to as specialist team within your hospital.
Absolutely, a recurrent miscarriage team who specialize in looking at the reasons that people are miscarrying, because obviously you're getting pregnant. It's not getting pregnant that's the problem, it's keeping the pregnancy. And there are lots and lots of different factors that can affect whether you keep it. Some might be as simple as lifestyle, but it could also be to do with a health problem that the woman has or the partner, or something structural, something in the blood. You know, there's lots of different things that can cause cause miscarriage, essentially.
And
they can be treated.
And obviously quite a good thing to know, so that if you have had a second or a third miscarriage, you should be offered, you know, to be referred to the recurrent miscarriage unit. But if you're not, you know that you can ask to do that.
Absolutely.
Rather than just going through many, many miscarriages and sort of not doing anything about it.
Yes, absolutely.
But obviously, there's the sort of medical side of things which the recurrent miscarriage unit will look at if that's an issue. You know, what can couples do that isn't necessarily medical to decrease their chance of miscarriage, increase their chance of conceiving again? And, you know, as you said, you know, most miscarriages are because of a chromosomal abnormality, and that's a bit of a lottery, isn't it? You know, that hopefully the next embryo that is conceived doesn't have that, and the pregnancy is really straightforward.
Yeah.
What
and
can
you could
we
just
do?
Be
is
really unlucky, and you could have had three consecutive miscarriages that have all just been a random genetic abnormality, and there's no reason why you won't have another successful, absolutely successful pregnancy. But obviously, by that stage, you want to be looking into why. And you know, it's with recurrent miscarriage, it is rather different from actually getting pregnant. You know, with getting pregnant, there's lots of things in your lifestyle that you can do to try and be healthy and be the right weight and not drink and smoke and all the rest of it. Once you're pregnant, you're healthy enough to have got pregnant. You know, you want to be looking after yourself as much as you can. You know, being reducing your physical and emotional stress levels as well. But as I say, very often it is out of your hands, and it is going to be either just nature's way of saying this one's not meant to be, or if it's happening again and again, a medical problem that needs to be, you need to find out what it is and get it looked at and hopefully treated so that you can get pregnant again.
One thing that's often talked about, especially with relation to conception, but I'm sure plays a big deal in terms of pregnancy, is sort of stress levels. And if you're stressed about getting pregnant, we know that actually that does affect your ability to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And it is stressful, pregnancy, especially if you've had a miscarriage or two miscarriages, or, you know, potentially even six or seven. But trying to manage that stress is probably, you know, one of the few really positive things you can do as someone who is pregnant in the sort of early stages. So I suppose whatever relaxes you. So that might be mindfulness or meditation or yoga or going for a run.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I'd certainly agree with that in terms of getting pregnant. When you are pregnant, you know, you can be going through huge amounts of stress. You can have pregnant women in war zones or in horrific situations who keep the pregnancy. So the body is quite good once it's pregnant at keeping the pregnancy if it's meant to be. So I think it's, although you obviously should do what you can to look after yourself and decrease your stress levels, it's often so far out of the woman's hands that I think that plays a much less of a role than it does in actually getting pregnant in the first place, where it's absolutely fundamentally important.
And at the beginning of the podcast, you talked about some of the myths surrounding what causes miscarriage, like exercise and sex and all these things that, you know, probably they don't play a role. Obviously, we all know of women that are told you can't exercise and you can't have sex during pregnancy because of specific risks. Am I right in thinking that you should consider yourself safe to do all those things unless you're specifically told otherwise by, you know, like flying, for example? People sort of say that flying presents a little bit of a risk when you're pregnant. Should you think, I'm not going to fly to mitigate that risk? Yes.
No, I'd say you should be treating it as a completely normal pregnancy, as you would have done with your first one, unless they've found a reason in your history or your health or your partner's health that means that it's not safe to do so. But that's very specific and very individual, depending on what the problem is. So I'd say unless a doctor's told you not to do something, there's no reason to avoid doing the things you would normally do in a healthy pregnancy.
And I guess trying to listen to your body too. I mean, I remember feeling unbelievably tired. So if you're feeling exhausted, that's your body saying you need to sleep more. If you're feeling really hungry and you're eating 50% more than what you usually did for sort of two of those days, then kind of within reason, you probably should. And there's some evidence to show that pregnancy cravings are related to what the body needs.
Yeah,
is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. No, so I think listening to your body at any point, whether you're pregnant or not, is a good idea, but particularly when you're pregnant, and it's all emphasized and exaggerated when you're pregnant. So making sure you're listening to that and not focusing too much on non-pregnancy related parts of your life that might be.
So chocolate, does chocolate count if your body's craving a piece of chocolate?
A piece, yes. Probably a couple of bars, no.
Chiara, thank you. I really hope this has been helpful for some of you listening. It's a difficult subject to talk about. When you experience miscarriage, it is often devastating because the hope, the little secret that you had and you were so excited about has been taken away from you, but it can be physically demanding too. But all of this is compounded by the fact that I've certainly found miscarriage a very lonely experience, because no one really talked about it then. We are getting better at it. But because we maybe don't talk about miscarriages as much as we talk about other things, people feel very alone. So if you're listening to this and you can't bear to share your experience with your friends, we hope that you found that just listening to our podcast has been helpful. One thing to remember is that you are not alone. Please do share this podcast. I think it's good to know about miscarriage even while you're pregnant so that you're prepared for every eventuality. Don't forget to make sure that you're subscribed to the Parenthood podcast and follow us on Instagram. We're at theparent.hood. We've had a huge reaction to the podcasts we've done so far and some great suggestions for future episodes, including this one. So please do keep them coming in. But in the meantime, from Chiara and me, thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.